Welcome to Dialogues in Afro-Latinidad, a podcast dedicated to amplifying and elevating Afro-Latinx histories, cultures, and communities across the Americas and beyond. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Reed Vasquez. Join us for conversations with experts and artists to learn more about Afro-Latinidad. Venga. Our guest today is Josue Perea. He serves as executive director of the Afro-Latino Forum, co-curator of the Afro-Latina Theology Project, executive producer of the documentary Faith and Blackness, an exploration of Afro-Latina spirituality, and co-host of the podcast Majestad Prieta. His perspectives on Afro-Latinidad have been reported in various media outlets, such as the New York Times, The New Yorker, and Sojourners, and his writings are available in numerous publications, including the anthology Let Spirit Speak, Cultural Journeys Through the African Diaspora, the Revista de Estudios Colombianos, and Engaging Religion. Josue, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Michelle. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here, and I'm really excited to be part of this podcast this time around.
Excellent. So I'm going to jump in with, so I know that you were born in Colombia, and then you came to the U.S. as a child, and now you're the executive director of the Afro-Latino Forum. So tell us about your journey and how it all connects to Afro-Latinidad.
Yeah, well, you know, my father is from a region in Colombia, Chocó, which is the, by percentage, the blackest region in Colombia, not the largest. I think there are other regions that are larger, like Buenaventura is larger. But Chocó is the largest by percentage. So my father is from Chocó, and then he met my mom in Bogotá. And then, you know, we came to New York, but because of the blackness of my father, we'd always known that we were black. We had always known that we were black folk. I even remember when I was 5 years old or something around when I was really young, 5, 6, some kid made fun of me and my father's skin color, like something mm-hmm. like called us chocolate or something like kids. Mm-hmm. And my father at that point had just made sure to remind me that like we should always be proud of who we are. Like, yeah, so it's like, should never be, you know, you're not lesser than anyone because of your blackness. You should be proud of your blackness. And so ever since that moment, I just remember just always growing up really being proud in our blackness, and like blackness was not something that was like skirted around or something that we didn't discuss. So then, of course, when we moved here to the States, it was much easier for me to then understand. Well, it was different, but it was easier for me to understand like a diasporic blackness, right? Obviously, mm-hmm. I have language for it now. But it was easier for me to understand it because I was hanging out with black Cuban kids, black Dominican kids, black Puerto Rican kids, and kids from the Anglophone Caribbean, just chilling with them. And then I was like, oh, we're all like the same. And so I had this very much diasporic understanding of blackness that was kind of embedded into me in New York City. I first lived in Washington Heights and then lived in Brooklyn. And of course, Brooklyn is just so diverse, and especially there's the black representation of Brooklyn. So all of that, I think, led me to have this very growing understanding of my blackness. And it was so interesting. So like when I was a young child, I remember that I would buy like books like that. I don't know, like I bought like Ivan Van Sertima's book on like blacks in science, which mm-hmm. is like what kid is buying that at 12? I don't know. Other kids are doing that at 11 or 12, I'm sure. But I was doing it. And I remember that talking with Miriam Jimenez Roman, you know, may she rest in power. She said, she's like, oh, you just always had this burgeoning identity of blackness. Like it was there and you always knew it and you had it. So that's why you bought all those random books that you bought. And I think it just became something much more present. In undergrad, I wrote something on black Colombians in the Colombian Revolution and how black Colombians were treated about that. And that just kind of helped cement it a little bit more for me. So all of this, these are different ways in which led me to this path of like, hey, I understand my blackness as a social being who's Colombian here in New York, or in Colombia than in New York. And then I understand that I'm linked with broader people of African descent, right? I'm linked with Jamaicans, I'm linked with African Americans, I'm linked with all these folk. And then it led to just having a more deeper appreciation of blackness. But to then to start to understand why is it important for me to start to live into that and identify, not only identify with my blackness, which again has never been a problem, but just to make sure that I've centered Afro-Latinos in my conversation around blackness, right? Because then I started to see how in spaces, in different spaces and places, Afro-Latinos would not be mentioned, right? Especially in Latino spaces. So anyway, before I keep going on some other tangents, I just think that those were ways that have led me there. And then, you know, the work with the forum came after I did the work on Afro-Colombians. I did, for a brief period of time, we did something called, me and a friend, Naila Rosario, did something called the Afro-Colombian New York, which was a small group that lasted for a few years, that we did a lot of activities on informing people on what Black Colombians and the Black Colombian presence here in New York. And that's how I met Miriam Jimenez Roman and Juan Flores in the forum. And they were like, hey, do you know what we do here? You're doing that. Here's what we do. Why don't you join what we do as well? And that just became a very generative relationship where Juan and Miriam became really close friends of mine and mentors to me. And you know, I'm honored to continue their legacy in different ways and making sure that people have an understanding of their Blackness and Afro-Latinidad through the ways that they helped us all learn about it.
Mm-hmm. That is amazing. You mentioned, you touched on a few points from your childhood to your evolution in New York. And just wondering if there are any defining moments that where you said, okay, this is what I'm going to be dedicating, you know, centering my life around and promoting surrounding Afro-Latinidad and letting people become more aware. What were some defining moments for that?
There was definitely one in my childhood that made me realize that I was like a Black person in the U.S.
Mm.
For a little bit of period of time, for like 6 months, I lived in Hackettstown, New Jersey, which is a small town in New Jersey. And it was, you know, growing. So when we first moved to New York from Colombia, you know, we were in Washington Heights. Washington Heights is diverse. It was much more diverse, much less only Dominican then, right? Like now, mm-hmm. Washington Heights is mostly Dominican. I think by then, at that point in time when we moved there, there were a lot of Cubans still there. There were a lot of Puerto Ricans there. So it was a lot more diverse. And so, you know, it was fun. But then I go to Hackettstown, New Jersey, which was very white with five kids of color entirely in that school. Like it was like you could count the kids of color in one or two hands. Like it wasn't that many kids. So I went there and I remember that, you know, I was playing football. I was learning how to play football. I didn't know how to play football, American football. And one of the white kids, you know, called me the N-word. He was like, oh, you only won because you got the N-word on your team. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know what that word meant, to be honest. Like, I just didn't know what it meant, right? Like,
right.
I'm from Colombia. I've just been here a year and change. I don't know what that N-word means. And so then this other white kid fought him and beat him up. He was like, I'm sorry. We're not all like that. We're not racist. I don't know about him. So I was like, okay, whatever. I don't know what just happened. I remember telling my parents and telling people about it, and they were like all concerned, but I didn't understand. But that moment I realized, I was like, oh, I'm Black in this context. I get it. I'm not only Black in a Colombian context, I'm Black in a US context. And oh, and this is what it means to be Black in a US context. And I remember that then that along with the work that I mentioned briefly. So when I did my thesis for my history, undergrad in history, on Black Colombians in the Colombian Revolution. Mm-hmm. I remember that at that point, I was like, I probably need to be one of the people that thinks and teaches much about this. Not because what's currently out there is not good. It's just because what's currently out there is not written by Black Colombians. So I was like, oh, so there's not a lot of Black Colombians writing about Black Colombian experience. Black Colombian experience is being written about, is being written of, but is not being written or discussed by Black Colombians. So then I remember, while doing all the research, and you know, you read people like Peter Wade, who's just become a real big name, especially to think about Black Colombian stuff, and no shade on Peter Wade, whatever, but it was like, oh, but no Black Colombians are the ones who are discussing this. Even in Colombia, at that point, although there's more people now, at that point, this is what, 2005?
Yeah, right.
There was just less production of things that were done by Black Colombians, about Black Colombians.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember saying that like, oh, I probably need to be the one who does that. And then I remember when Naila reached out to me, when my friend Naila reached out to me, was like, oh, we should do this thing. She wanted to do it. She was like, she wanted to do something on Afro-Colombians. She was like, but I know you know more about that. Let's do that. I remember then thinking, this is actually the right way. Like, if it's us talking about us, informing about us, not looking at it through a different lens, but actually looking at it through our own lens. And I think those were two main touch points. And the third touch point was really meeting Miriam Jimenez Roman. Like, when I met Miriam, and Miriam was just telling me like the work that she was been doing, and she's been doing work. She was, you know, she was doing work at that point for many years and also with many different communities.
Mm-hmm.
So like Miriam is Afro Puerto Rican, right? But she had done work with Afro Mexican communities, with Panamanian communities, with Afro Ecuadorian communities. So then I was just like, oh, wow. So then I was like, I remember then thinking like, also, it's not only that I have to be the one who talks about Afro-Colombian stuff, that's important, but I also have to start to see how all of our narratives are being kind of challenged and erased. And then I started to see that in my own way. So my undergrad degree is in history, my master's degree is in theology. Mm-hmm. And I started to notice that in theology, like, we're not discussed. So then I started to realize, oh, there are ways that I can do that in these different formats, in these different spaces, sorry. And I was like, oh, the theology spaces for sure. Because mm-hmm. the conversations in theology spaces are 30 years behind where we're at in sociology or in the rest of social sciences. Like, the way that we talk about race here mm-hmm. is not a conversation that's being openly had in theological spaces. So I remember thinking about, like, oh, well, maybe I need to be the one who's, like, letting them know, like, we're way behind and here's how we're behind. And I think those were the three touch points, right? Mm-hmm. That thing that happened in my childhood, the undergrad. And then I remember the just learning about the diasporic ways in which all of our struggles and all of our battles are linked. That really made me feel like, okay, this is something that I really want to do personally.
Hmm. I'm so glad that you have. And I know that you are really interested in going beyond this, the trope of invisibility. I mean, it's certainly important. It still remains, but you've been thinking a lot about going beyond that. And also not just celebrating, but centering Blackness. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. You know, just, you know, and as you know, I've only been part of the, let's call it Afro-Latino movement since I met Miriam and Juan, which was 2009, right around that time, 2010. So, you know, I've only been part of it for a little bit of time. There's people like you've been in it longer, other people have been in it longer. But I see that we remain kind of stuck in this, like, oh, you know, I'm Afro-Latina too. I'm Afro-Latino too. Like, look at me. Like, I'm also Black. Like, ways. So we get stuck in the identity and the visibility, right? The forum's first conference ever was called Strategies for Visibility and Action. It was Afro-Latinos Now, Strategies for Visibility and Action. And at that point, it was like, yeah, how do we make sure that we're visible? But then the second conference was Afro-Latinos Now, Race Counts. How do we then make sure that race is counting for Latinos? Why? Because eventually we have to move, I feel like, as the Afro-Latino movement. We have to hold space for the fact that we still need to be recognized. And yes, our identity matters, our personal identity matters. And yes, all of those things play a role. But then how do we move beyond just the visibility, let's call it visibility politics, into how do we address needs that are faced by our community all the time? Mm-hmm. Because if we keep talking about, well, the media doesn't show us and all these things don't show us, all of those things remain true. I'm not saying that those things are not true.
Right.
I am just saying that there's got to be a shift for the conversation to move beyond just visibility, to really move towards action and to really move towards coalition building and to move into other political actions that will lead us to better, like I was sharing, I think I said briefly, to lead us more to centering Black liberation as part of our struggle, right? Like, I keep seeing, like, that our struggle as Afro-Latino people, to use a broad term, as Afro-Latinas people, as Afro-Latinas, our struggle sometimes gets seen as separate. Like, oh, we have this one struggle. Mm-hmm. So here we are. We do. We have to talk about it with Latinos. We have to make sure that white Latinos and non-Black Latinos understand who we are and that we're there. And then we have to kind of struggle in African-American or, let's say, Black spaces to kind mm-hmm. of cement our Blackness. But eventually we got to move beyond just those struggles. And eventually we have to move, great, now how do we work together to, like, help our situations, right? For example,
right.
Black Latinas are one of the most, are one of the most affected groups by all the abortion bans that are happening in the country. So then what strategies do we use to support Black Latinas? That's beyond recognition. That's beyond, like, we know some of those numbers are there. Some of them are hard to categorize. Mm-hmm. How do we do that? How do we move so that the economy works for our people as well, right? So, for example, like, in Afro-Latinos in the U.S. economy showed that, like, Afro-Latinas can earn the most and can have the most degrees, but are not always the most participant in the workforce. So right. That's an interesting thing. So we're the most educated, but we don't participate in the work, especially Afro-Latina. So how do we move? So I just think that collectively we have to move somehow beyond, like, just, like, recognizing that, oh yeah, you know, this person didn't think that I was Black and Latino. And I think that's great. But I do. So yes, I think that's important, but I do yes. think that we have to move beyond that. Just as a movement, maybe not as individuals, but as a movement to start to advocate for other things, right? Like, oh, okay, how do we talk about criminalization? How do we talk about how are we embedded into policy frameworks, right? One of the things that we've been trying to do at the Afro Latino Forum, especially since our founding, we've had like three focus areas. We always say we want to focus on research, policy, and action. Okay. Really, research is research and education together. Policy is policy advocacy, really. It's not really policy. Mm-hmm. But in the policy framework, there's really no one that includes, there's really not a lot of conversations. Like Afro-Latinos are not being considered in many spaces when we talk about policies towards Latinos in this country. So, and yeah, sometimes it's because we have to do the work of like, oh, let me tell you that it's a lot of us here and let me show you that. But if we just get stuck there, then we never get to this part. So one of the things we're trying to do is how do we embed Afro-Latino conversations into policy conversations, into policy frameworks? Because when policy frameworks are being done, they're not being done with Afro-Latinos in mind. So how do we make sure that that can happen? So that's what I think I mean by that, right? Like, it's important that we still understand who we are and we visibilize our population. And obviously, we need research numbers for that. Like, the more research numbers that we have, the better, right? Mm-hmm. Because the fact that we can segment a population by being both Black and Latino helps us to understand who our people are. But then how do we then use that information to center some concerns that might affect our community on their day-to-day lives, right? The daily lived experience of Afro-Latino, especially in this country, that I think matters. And so I'd love to see us more as a movement do that. And I think that's some of the work that we want to try to do, right? How do we move beyond just, okay, talk about our identities, which is important, but move towards more towards action, right? What does our identities mean? And then how do we move towards action? I hope that makes sense.
Yes, no, and I want to just follow up with asking about the work of the Afro-Latino Forum and thinking about are there any particular projects that are evolving or coming that are going to come up in the next couple of years that address those specific points that you mentioned, since that seems to be an area that you all, you know, really want to take on. I mean, because again, as you point out, those conversations, on the one hand, yes, there's still conversations about visibility, et cetera, but also I know, especially for the work you all did around the census and that policy piece and making sure that Afro-Latinos were in that conversation. And I found it, you know, to some ways quite shocking that they had to have a conversation about, like, multiple panels and, you know, all kinds of things about it. But at the same time, I was like, this is where we are. And so this is what we need to do. And so we were so fortunate that you all were taking such a prominent lead on that and informing and keeping the public informed about what was happening.
Yeah. I think I was going to say that's still one of the things that we're working on. So the census piece is still, you know, they made their recommendations of like moving with the form with including the Latino/Hispanic categories co-equal to a racial category. So we're, mm-hmm. No, we're in disagreement with that openly, and I think we're going to be always openly in disagreement with that. And I think they move forward in that regard. That doesn't end our work. I think what we have to do, and I think for us, what's important is to make sure to educate people why the census matters a lot. I don't think people understand why the census matters, and so like you were pointing earlier, Michelle, we have to do a lot of education on the census. Like, why is it that the census matters? The census is not a place for your personal identity, like, well, I identify as whatever I want to identify. It's like, great. That's not necessarily for that. I support you with that, and I'm here with you for that. Mm-hmm. But the census really matters for allocation of resources for our communities.
And so exactly. The less
that our community gets to see itself in the form and gets to be represented, then the less likely that our communities receive the resources that they need. And so there's still a lot of work that we still do there. So we still want to do a public information campaign on the census. Mm-hmm. That we hope will then eventually lead to, we still have to kind of establish, you know, we understand, and I understand why the visibility thing is important, right? Because in Latino populations and communities, you know, the normalization of mestizaje is what's normalized, right? And so that therefore a Black of something is always the secondary or tertiary opinion, is not the primary description of someone, right? Maybe except for a few places. But, you know, that's the way it works. So, of course, so we still have to then tell you, like, do you know that, you know, like in Colombian context, like I think the official government figures have Colombians at like 10% being Black. Mm-hmm. But anyone who's been to Colombia it knows that it's like 40% black.
Yeah. You can see it. Like,
so. You can see it. Yeah. So we have to do this unlearning, help people unlearn what they've learned, be like, oh yeah, that's what you think. That's actually not true. Mm-hmm. Let me show you what's really true. And so that takes some time. And I understand that that's what we need. That's what we're in the visibility in, the, you know, in that conversation of visibility, identity, like that's important. But how then do we do that collectively? How then do we move that conversation collectively so that we can bring about change for our communities, right? So what do I mean by that? So for example, with the census, if we get enough people to start selecting that they're both Black and Latino, right? Mm-hmm. Which was the census, the forum's first ever census campaign was in 2010. And it was that, exactly that. It was check both. And we did it. We had received a small grant from the National Coalition for Civic Engagement, which was a Black coalition for civic engagement, who were very interested in making sure the Black numbers went up. And so they were like very interested in making sure that we supported with that. So continuing that campaign is going to be important, right? Mm-hmm. And in that, starting to explain to people the differences between ethnicity, nationality, and race, right? Because mm-hmm. I think they're not for us, not for you and me understand that really well. Other people understand that really well. But there are people who struggle with that understanding. Mm-hmm. And so I think just thinking about that for some people really, really educating the public on that, you never lose out a lot. You never lose out. We always need to do education, right. Public education on that. So I think one of the main emphases that we want to do is public education on the census still. And we want to work together with a lot of the other organizations that form part of the Afro-Latino Coalition to inform that. But we also want to do it outside of just the Afro-Latino Coalition. We want to work with like the what's called legacy Latino organizations and also legacy Black organizations, right? So that they also understand why it's important that our population, because we had to do that a lot. For this census round, we had to meet with the NAACP's, the NUL, a bunch of different people and kind of remind them like, oh yeah, you know that, you know, you can be Black and Latino and these are the ways that that happens. We had to also do that with some Latino folks, some Latino orgs like, oh, you know, you can be Black and Latino. So, but working with them, now that they understand that, working with them to realize why it's important to count our population, especially when it comes to different areas of research, right? Like, understanding the way that our people, what our lived experiences of our people are, is really important for our movement. Like, you know, the fact that we have some numbers so that we can see what the economy looks like, the fact that we have some numbers so we can see what the abortion looks like for Black Latinas is really important because it tells us about the lived experiences. If we lose the segmentation of those numbers, then we lose the possibility of understanding that. So I think just doing more education campaigns is kind of going to be our way to move. Mm-hmm. Just because that's going to be one of the ways that people work. And then, of course, making sure that we're embedded into policy frameworks. So working with, you know, getting more of a policy wing of the Afro-Latino movement that's mm-hmm. talking to or the Afro-Latino Congress people, you know, like Max Frost, like Maxwell Frost and like España, like Rep España, right? Like to talk with them and to make sure that they, you know, because there are Afro-Latinos in the House, mm-hmm. you know, how can they represent the concerns of the Afro-Latino population? And I think that that's coming because I think that the more noise that we make, for lack of a better term, the more noise that we make about the census, for example, like why this issue was opposed by literally every Afro-Latino organization in this country and group and podcaster and everything, like everyone opposed it. Why did they oppose it? Started to make questions to them like, oh, I just thought that we were all fine with this. Like, no, we're not all fine with it. Here's the reason why yeah. we need to fix it. And I think all of that helped. So, for us, I think one of the big things coming up is to do that. And I think we'd like to do, what I really love to do is to get together. We actually just submitted a grant proposal for that for the National Endowment for the Humanities. Mm-hmm. So really get a round table going on like, what are all the experts, you know, someone like people like yourself, Michelle, and other people, what are we seeing as the main issues that really affect our people? Right? Because there's different ways. Like someone could see it differently if they're stuck in like studying Afro Colombians in the 1850s. Like that's a thing, but what is affecting us now in 2024? And I think that would be something really good because then I think we get a broad endeavor. Like let's talk with some community folk. Mm-hmm. Let's talk with some experts, some professors. Let's talk with some other people and see what it is. Do a convening and then be able to form a strategy out of that. Mm-hmm. Because then maybe everyone says we still need to talk about visibility and then maybe I'm wrong. It's like, no, we still need to do that. But then I think it just grabs a broader perspective of what I think we might need to do.
Yeah, I think that collaborative approach is really critical to try to get in all these different perspectives of expertise, both, you know, as you mentioned, scholars, community leaders, you know, other kinds of organizations. Though all those perspectives are important. You can't really understand unless you're looking at different aspects, whether it's historical and the present, because the past informs the present, and we need to know that. But we also, as you said, need to know what's happening right now on the ground and how we can affect change. I want to shift a little bit into your work in the theological framework. I know you mentioned a little bit about that and how Afro-Latinidad is pretty much absent. And so I want you to say a little bit about that work. How do you use that? What do you do in that space to make sure people understand what Afro-Latinidad is, its contributions, that it has never been absent from theological arenas? So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So right after undergrad, I thought I was going to get a PhD in history. Mm-hmm. And so my advisor at that point, who was a really great professor, he was like, hey, don't do your master's in history. So do your master's in something else, because then it'll give you an interdisciplinary approach. So at that point, I was like, oh, it's either theology or philosophy. Those are the two I wanted to do. He was like, okay, pick one, whatever, do whatever you want. So I chose to do theology also because I grew up as a son of a pastor. Like I mentioned, we were brought to this country because my father was asked to be a pastor. So I just to make sure that I understood some Christian theological perspectives correctly was always important to me. And then as I started to, you know, as I was in there, of course, I'm more focused on like talking about blackness and Latinidad and stuff already. And that just wasn't there. And I noticed that in theological spaces, the conversation around Latinos and Latinidad is a very mestizo conversation. It's only about mestizaje. I want to say that's the only way that it was spoken about, at least when I was learning about it. And I will say that it's still rare today to see different perspectives. You see them, but it's the normative conversation in theology is that all of us are mestizo. And because all of us are mestizo, then therefore all of us, this is how we should identify. And so like, there are just all these ways in which that happened. And I just remember starting to feel uncomfortable. Like, you know, like, I don't really like, this doesn't fit with me. And I just started to notice that our stories were missing. And so, you know, I finished the degree in theology. And then me and some friends years later started to really, you know, people would ask us like, oh, can you come and talk about being Afro-Latino in theology spaces? And I was like, okay, sure, I guess. But I was like, but I would always be very critical of like what I see missing, right, in the theological space. And then I started to realize that I wasn't the only one. And then other people that I met throughout were also Black Latino. Some one person immediately comes to mind, Yolanda, is a Black Puerto Rican. She was, of course, struggling with that. There's other two other Black Colombians I'm thinking about. They were struggling with that. And so, yeah, so it started to just become an issue, because then when you talk about Latinidad in theology, you really are talking about a mestizo identity and this racial mixture understanding, and not really talking about Blackness, which I thought was really strange, especially when, like, you know, like, especially for me, it was really interesting because growing up in New York City, you know, we went to a Pentecostal church. Pentecostalism is a very Black space, but it was just seen not as Black based on what you read and based on the description that you saw, which was really strange. It was really actually like strange to me. Like, what do you mean this is not Black? Clearly this is Black. And so all of that was really interesting and really shocking, to be honest. And so what me and other people wanted to do is, okay, great. Well, how do we then talk about race in theological spaces? Because what we notice is that in theology, the conversation is a very binary conversation. It's either Black or white. There's no middle. Mm-hmm. And it's a racial binary conversation, especially when talking about theology, especially when talking about Latino. Latino theology actually doesn't even have a racial binary. It's one identity. We're all mestizos, and that's that. And so then I just started to tell people, like, I don't see myself in these stories, nor am I included. I'm purposely not supposed to be included in that story. And then I noticed other people were feeling the same way. So me and some people came up with something that were, you know, just started out recently, but it's called the Afro-Latina Theology Project. The idea of the Afro-Latina Theology Project is to start to share different narratives and stories of Afro-Latinas as we talk about theology and spirituality, because the contributions of people who are Black and Latino were not being included in theological conversations, either whether we talk about it in the Latino theological space, where the conversation was more normalized around being mestizo, or if we talk about it in the Black theological space, where the conversation really normalized around being African-American. And so then, you know, it felt like for some of us who were theologians who do that work, it felt like, oh, we're not part of either conversation. Because mm-hmm. whenever we came in with an Afro-Latino perspective, it was like, oh, that's nice. Yeah, that's another perspective. Well, that's good. That can stay over there. But it wasn't being something that was being discussed. So we decided to help that. So what we, you know, what that project hopes to do is to diversify narratives. And one of the things I remember early on when I spoke to someone about, like, oh, you know, we need to include more conversations about Black Latinos. They were like, well, there's nothing written by Black Latinos. And I was like, well, that's not true. Yeah. And exactly. And I was like, and you know what? Fine. I'm going to find people and we're going to put things up all the time that people write, that they do have reflections on spirituality and theology. But just because you don't think it's that doesn't mean that it's not that. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we have with the Afro-Latino Theology Project is like putting up just random writings that people submit to us, right? We've been around for, I don't know, a little bit over 2 years, under 2 years, and we mm-hmm. have a bunch of writings. I've also done some writing around how Pentecostalism is Black, how Pentecostal worship is Black. Just out of why it's important to include our perspective when thinking about religion and Christianity, specifically I deal with Christian spaces, even though that's not the only theological perspective, obviously, that exists, but that's the one that I deal with the most. The project does deal with diverse religious perspectives. So we talk about it in Christian theology, of course, but we also talk about it in let's call it what Lukumi or West African descendant traditions mm-hmm. talk about. We also do talk about it in Buddhist perspectives. So we do have a diverse perspectives there. But it was just really important because we just noticed it was missing. And we just noticed that the conversation on race in theological spaces is way behind, especially in Latino theological spaces. The conversation around race and ethnicity is behind. I mean, there's still books being written about how some person from Africa is a mestizo. And it's like, that's not how that works. Like that, you know, people defend these points as like very progressive viewpoints. I'm like, that is not a progressive viewpoint. That's actually very mm-hmm. regressive stance. And so we just started to notice there's some conversations that needed to be added. So we wanted to form a collective of different people who are in this field, who talk about those issues so that we can write about it, but also we can talk about it. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that came out of that was this film that we did called Faith in Blackness, right? Faith in Blackness, an exploration of Afro-Latina spirituality, was really just really that. I was filming some stories. The original wasn't supposed to be a documentary. It was just supposed to be filming stories of different people. And then eventually it became like, we were like, oh, we have something here that's a little bit of a story. And what we noticed was that what people were reflecting on is how their Blackness has influenced their spirituality and vice versa. And so for us, that became really important. Like, yeah, see, this is an important part. It's something that is often not discussed, right, within theological spaces, of just how someone who's Latino and Black and how their Blackness plays a role into their religion, that doesn't get discussed much. So we wanted to make sure to highlight it. So that's what we're doing there. We hope to continue to do more work. There's still more work to be done because just the field itself is still behind on conversations mm-hmm. on race and ethnicity. But we think we'll add to that, those conversations. Obviously, Black theological conversations are much more advanced in the conversations on race and ethnicity. That they include an Afro-Latino perspective is still something that's not being done. But we really want to make sure that we make an impact in Latino theological spaces, also influence Black theological spaces to include Black Latino perspectives. And there are a lot of young people coming out in that movement now. Like, there's three people that I know right now, four right now that are going to get their PhDs on that in the next year. Mm-hmm. So the more that people come, you know, the more that the field gets broader and the more that they will then be able to add their own stories to that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And so thinking about that space, but also some of the other things you talked about earlier, I want to kind of get a sense of if you had to kind of point to say to people, this is why this is so important, what would you identify as some of the most urgent issues for, you know, thinking particularly about U.S. Afro-Latinx communities, but certainly we can also, you know, draw in Afro-Latin American communities. But what do you think are some of the most urgent issues that we really need to address?
Well, I think our representation and counting, I think like the fact that we could be lost in some counts is really dire, and I think could have detrimental results for our population. Like, we're really actually concerned. Like, the census thing is not just like an angle, it's like an actual concern.
Yeah.
That if we are not seen and we can't count ourselves, then, you know, is what I learned through other global Black movements, what in global Black movements is called statistical genocide, right? The way you erase a population by statistics, therefore you don't see that population anymore. Therefore, we don't know how the population is doing. And now we don't deal with any of the issues. This strategy has happened to Black people in other places. So I'm concerned, I'm heavily concerned about that, because what we see is we see that impacted in different spaces. I was part of a conversation here in New York with a civil rights commission and a bunch of people. And they were like, we just take the census category. And we were like, well, what if I tell you that you could do that in a different way, in a better way? And they were like, okay, we'd love to learn more. But again, they just went with whatever is the norm. And so I think that that becomes really important. So I think that's the number one real important issue for us. I think, how do we make sure that we're represented in different research avenues? One of the things that we want to focus on more in the coming year is impacting research on Latinos or Blackness or Black folk in different ways that includes Afro Latinos, right? So, hey, does your X survey have an Afro Latino subset? Like, can I see that? Can I not? Can I help you get that? In different ways. We just met with someone from the Gates Foundation who, like, they had that same thing too. They were like, oh, you know, they've asked about Latinos in secondary school, but they never once have asked for racial identity of Latinos. So I was like, why? They were like, oh, I didn't know that we should. And I was like, yeah, what are Black Latinos doing versus non-Black Latinos? This just happened actually with someone who just asked us for help for research in a social science project, that they were just asking for just Latinos. And we were like, you should ask for Afro-Latinos. So numbering that aspect of it, for me, quantifying our people is really important, because it gives us stories and it gives us something to work on. So I think that's number one. I think a second thing is, how do we connect our movement to the broader, what I always say, the broader Black liberation? What do I mean by that, right? The Black liberation, depending on how people see it, is a movement for just really for Black communities to be able to be self-determined, but also to be able to work together for justice. If we don't see our struggle, our Afro-Latino movement struggle, connected to the broader Black liberation struggle, then we have an issue. And I think that there are some people who have moved away from that for some reason. I think early on there was a lot of that. And then some, I would need probably more time to parse it out, but I've seen some breaking of that. And then I see some like separation, like Afro-Latinidad is here and Blackness struggles are over here. No. All of those struggles are one and the same. Yeah. Then we use a different name. Sure. And maybe is the fat Latino becomes a very problematic thing for people sometimes. Okay, fine. But our struggle is that, right? We are Black people in this country. We have to center that conversation. Yeah, we have to fight and center for our Blackness in Latino spaces. But how do we see our struggle as connected with other Black liberation struggles? So I think that's really important. And I think a third thing, that I just see is just the needing for including more about who we are and our people in the curriculum. You know, in college curricula, I think is much easier to do because professors have a lot of leeway. Although now in state schools is a little bit different with some of the laws that are being passed, but making sure that there's information about that for kids coming up, right? For someone coming up, that they're learning about that. And not that it has to be a separate unit. So we just actually last year, we did a mini unit for the New York City Department of Education that will eventually get rolled out to all the schools for middle school students on Afro-Latinidad in New York City, which was great. They allowed us to do it and we got some people to do it, and it's going to be great once it gets released to people. But for us, even we said then, well, we'll do this unit. That's great. We'll do this unit. But how can we make sure that conversation is being included in regular part, in quote unquote regular Latino history portion of the curriculum? Mm-hmm. How is this included in regular Black portions of the curriculum? Like, are we included that identity, our identity in that? Because I think that's what's missing. I think one of the things that's missing is the fact that we are left out often of curriculum, in the curriculum, and of the curriculum. So we're not in there. So therefore, Afro-Latinidad awareness kind of comes in college. Mm-hmm. And then, which is fine. That could be, but what if it was earlier? And what if we have more information on people earlier? So I think that in seeing Afro-Latinos in the curriculum would be a third importance for me, because it's really important. Those would be my top three priorities.
Wonderful. Yeah, those are critical. I could talk all day with you about all of those, but we have to wrap up our podcast. And so for my final question, I always like to ask people about other specific resources, obviously the work you've done, but what other specific resources would you recommend to people if they want to learn more about any of the topics that you mentioned on their books or interviews or websites or podcasts? We're happy to share these and provide links to those on the episode resource page.
Yeah, I mean, you featured a lot of the people that we quote, so you've had a lot of them on. But of course, obviously, the Afro Latino Reader is a really important book. Racial Innocence by Tanya Hernandez is a really important book. But let me add something that I don't know. I don't know if people know. Afro Latinos in the U.S. Economy, really important book by Michelle Holder and Alan Aja. But a recent report that came out called the Centering Black Latinidad Report from UCLA Latino and Policy Institute. It's a really important report. I highlight it all the time because I think that the information that it contains, it summarizes a lot of information that they took, some information from research, from census surveys, from other things, and some things that they got from Afro-Latinos in the U.S. economy. The Centering Black Latinidad report is a really important report. So you can find that on their website. I think we have a link to it on our website to make sure that people know it, because Nancy Lopez, who's always collaborator of the forum, was one of the people that helped them fix that report. So that report is important. And I think another report is the report by the National Partnership for Women with the National Latina Institute. They did a report on who are the Latinas most affected by abortion bans. Mm-hmm. And that report showed that darker skin Latinas are the most affected by abortion bans. And so, like, I think just reading on those information, I think sometimes people, because I think sometimes we can get to it on a theoretical level. And I think sometimes when you read things that are like, oh, no, this is affecting us on the ground.
Yeah.
Then I think it becomes really salient for us. Like, oh, wait, oh, that's how that's affecting us. So mm-hmm. I think that's another important one. So those are two that come to mind that are probably, I mean, you featured a lot of other people that we have that we quote. But I think those, I'm going to say those two for now. Obviously, but for Afro Latin American stuff, you know, obviously some of the work that Afro Resistance does is really important. Mm-hmm. For example, like, they've really been on the ground with some of the issues happening in Haiti and Panama and some of the things there. So that's really important. I think knowing those issues is really important. So I would recommend like following Afro Resistance as well, just because they definitely have a more Afro Latin American perspective.
Okay.
And they talk about all these different issues. And also, what's the, oh man. Well, anyway, I don't want to spend too much time thinking, but there is someone that I just don't remember the name of the org right now. But there's work around reproductive justice. And I think just making sure that people look at how reproductive justice, so like the work of that her name is Diana Lugo Martinez does, Afro Latina in the reproductive justice space, would be really important, because I think that sometimes we don't think about how some of those realities are affecting our people. And I think sometimes that putting those stories there is really important. So yeah, those are the two resources, and then some ramblings that I said. But isn't Michelle, that you featured a lot of the people that we call. So I'm like, oh, they've already been here.
No, but it's worth you know, making them available, you know, highlighting those again and again, because and also the newer ones that people may be less familiar with. But that's how you continue to get the information out. So I appreciate all those resources, all that information. Thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. And I look forward to future conversations with you.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Thank you. Thank you for this podcast. This podcast is really important for our community. So thank you.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe and hear more episodes of Dialogues in Afro-Latinidad on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. And go to michellereedvasquez.com to check out our episode resources and learn more about the Afro-Latinidad Studies Institute.